Good afternoon. This is the professor, Dr. Ron Daniels, president of the Institute of the Black World 21st Century and distinguished lecturer emeritus from York College, City University of New York. Welcome you to this February 14th Valentine's Black Love edition of Vantage Point here on 99.5 FM. That's WBAI on the Pacifica Network with in association with or in collaboration with ycradio.org. Well, today we're going to continue our discussion of reimagining public safety and law enforcement and our call for a mayoral summit on gun violence, speaking directly, we hope, or indirectly, but we hope he's getting the message to our newly elected mayor, Eric Adams. Our special guest will be A.T. Mitchell, founder and president of Man Up Incorporated, a nationally renowned violence interrupter model that is absolutely incredible. He'll be on to talk to us about its background, how it came to be, and how applicable it is to this new crisis, or it may not be really new, but nonetheless, we want to talk about it. He'll be joining us momentarily. Well, we want to continue to ask each other to take care of each other. There's all kinds of madness out there from my perspective. I've given up on, you know, trying to persuade people to do anything other than to mask up at a minimum on the hope that just in case we got a dangerous virus circulating out there, then I don't want anyone to catch from me. Just in case, you know, mask up at a minimum. In fact, you know, there's all kind of conflicting information out there about masks and so forth and so on. I don't really care. There's a rush on the part of some of these people to follow the people's desires for quote-unquote freedom as opposed to following the science. And there's some people who don't want to follow the science either. But I ain't taking off my mask until I'm comfortable that there will, that the infection rates are down and the hospitalizations are down, which is an important point that, I mean, I just keep wanting to ask people about, it's not about me, myself, and I, it's about we, us, and our. I saw a story just the other day about the impact, the trauma that these hospital workers, nurses are going through, because they have to see it day after day after day, and they become, you know, they become anesthetized, they become numb, but they're really not numb, they're internalizing the harm, and then, you know, it goes away, and then it comes back again, these waves. So I want to see it permanently down, which means, you know, I don't want to be rushing. I can wait. You know, masks ain't no big deal. You know, people talk about how hard they are to breathe on. I'd rather it be hard to breathe and not be able to breathe at all. Because if you're 6 feet under, whatever it is, you ain't breathing. Anyway, let's care for each other. That's my competitive, redundant message. Let's care for each other. And whatever else you want to do beyond that is obviously, all of it is up to you. Well, and that's consistent with the notion of let's share some love on this day. This is Valentine's Day. I always like to blackenize these things, not because in a racial sense necessarily, but everything is so commercial, you know. It's always, you know, big business and all that kind of stuff. Yeah, it's just about black love, caring, sharing, turning to each other, holding each other real tight, particularly black people and people of color, still really experiencing the past and current traumas of racism, if you will, in American society. So this is, you know, we ought to be loving each other every day, turning to each other every day. But since it's a special day, let's just do some special bonding, if you will, on this particular day. Well, as I said before, we are going to be talking extensively, we hope, with A.T. Mitchell, who is the founder, again, of this incredible organization in East New York called Man Up Incorporated. highly touted articles that have been published before that indicate while there have been epidemics and increases in crime and violence in other areas, in some stretches there's been little, in some instances zero, over specific periods of time. Why is that? We want to know, if that's happening, why are we not emulating and holding that up as an example for the whole world to see? Well, we'll find out and to have that discussion. And we're, I understand we are now joined by the founder and president of Man Up Incorporated, none other than A.T. Mitchell. A.T. Mitchell, thank you so much for taking time out of your very busy schedule to be with us this afternoon on Vantage Point.
Good afternoon, Dr. Daniels. Never too busy for you and your audience. It's a pleasure to be with you again.
All right. Well, let's dive into it. Before we specifically talk about Man Up, and I want to do that, I want to talk about you, because you are a model for me and so many, the kind of visionary, courageous work that you're doing. I will never forget and will be forever thankful for you, you know, sending teams of people when we did the that march against the war on drugs in Washington, D.C. I remember another occasion when we brought people from the D.C. Justice Collaborative to visit with Man Up, and they were just blown away. And one of the most memorable occasions, they you know, I'm now retired, but I remember they talked for a long time. We had a forum on Do Black Lives Matter, really dealing with the same issue. And you brought a contingent over of representatives from Man Up, and people were just blown away, with the work that you're doing. So I have many, many memorable moments of how well the work you're doing is impacting positively people in this country, I mean, in East New York, but all across the country. But first of all, let's talk about you, A.T. Mitchell. You know, I mean, you're doing this incredible work now, but, you know, I like my audience to know about people. So are you a native New Yorker? You come from somebody else?
No,
I mean,
question.
Give us a little background on A.T.
Well, like you said, brother, I am a native New Yorker, proud brother, Brooklynite. I was born and raised in Brownsville in East New York, Brooklyn. And so I'm proud of that fact. I mean, considering these are some of the most troubled neighborhoods that this city has ever seen. But being a product of that environment and doing all of the things that you just mentioned, it shows you that there are black roses that grow out of cement. Respectfully, I was raised by a single, you know, super mom alongside my seven brothers and sisters on public assistance in the housing, the NYCHA housing authorities, they called the projects in East New York. And, you know, just like any other young, you know, brother, young boy growing up in an impoverished community, you know, I explored. I like to have fun. I go outside. I played, and you know, eventually became, you know, a teenager. I explored, you know, with the whole, you know, notion of in high school you want to be respected, you want to be known, especially popular with the girls. So I did with that whatever it took, and it led me from the front of the class to the back of the class. Eventually, you know, I became a troubled young person myself, making poor decisions. You know, and at the end of the day, I found myself in prison, unfortunately for a crime I didn't commit, but fortunately for the experience, because that's what leads me to the work that I do today. And while in prison, you know, I seen my fellow, the people that I was, you know, incarcerated with, my fellow inmates, and I realized early on that they were, you know, really a lot of them was in bad shape. They couldn't read, they couldn't write. And I felt it was my purpose, my role, to help them, help, you know, while we was in prison together. So I started getting active inside. And from there, man, I started helping people, you know, help them get ready to go home and how to cope with the trauma. Eventually I got released, thankfully. And I hit the ground running. I never looked back. I just came back to my neighborhood with a glorified prison. And I wanted my young people then to learn differently, that wasn't our rites of passage. And so I started youth programs, developing programs, alternatives to incarceration programs. And I started my activism, you know, at a very young, you know, age. And I was, you know, blessed to be able to be in the company of people like yourselves and Brother Charles Barron, Reverend Daughtry, Reverend Sharpton, you know, Viola Plummers, and and so many, you know, Brenda Stokely's and so many of you all that helped lend and contributed to my dynamics as a leader. I followed you all, you know, for many years. You know, you, the best leaders were the best followers. And so eventually I got a chance to bring all of those worlds together when an 8-year-old named Deshaun Hill was shot and killed in East New York. And it really troubled my spirit, and I felt I wasn't doing enough. And I just began to organize community. That's when, you know, I started with my community justice and family justice model, you know, called Man Up Incorporated, which is a whole...
Okay, let's just pause up for one quick second here, because I just want to tease out some of this, because it's interesting how, you know, if you think about El Haj Malik El Shabazz, whose martyrdom we will be memorializing a week from today, you know, he was a troubled young man, you know, who went into the prison, though he was guilty, but it wasn't huge crime. It was petty offenses and so forth and so on. But nonetheless, he was incarcerated. But he turned prison into a university, into a college. And so I'm hearing something similar to you, that, you know, you were... You know, and there's a lot of people, unfortunately, a lot of people don't realize that. A lot of people are in the joint for reasons, I mean, plea bargains and all kind of stuff that they did not, and for crimes they didn't commit. But you used the time to turn your life around. So that was one critical sort of force. And you saw others and, you know, their situation, and you saw an opportunity, you know, to make change. And then, because that's always my question, you know, what turned you into a social and political activist? You observed others and then decided to form your concept of how to move forward in terms of creating Man Up Incorporated. Go back a little bit and just talk about the death of this child. It was almost like a child, right? I mean, talk about that in terms of how that impacted you.
No question. I was a teenager when this all happened to me, man. I was young. I was dumb, and I really didn't know the consequences of a lot of the behaviors that I was exhibiting. I didn't have knowledge of the law, and of course we were poor, right? And so that's a formula for. I mean, I just assumed that, you know, that the justice, the scales of justice was equal, and that if a person is innocent, they'll be proven innocent. But unfortunately, when you come from our neighborhoods, we learned early on that the justice, the scales are not actually equal. They're very unbalanced. So, yeah, like you said, man, I did discover. That's how I learned about Malcolm. I learned about Elijah. I learned about so many other greats. I read the book, you know, Message to a Black Man, the autobiography of Malcolm X by Alex Haley and others. I really began to come more into myself, and I realized that, you know, I used to ask this question, Dr. Daniels, inside, like, why me? Why am I experiencing this traumatic experience? Why did I have to go through this? And I realized now what I didn't know then, and that was because it was why not me? You know, I was the better person who was going to be able to take those experiences and in my future use it to be who I am today. And had I not gone through those endeavors, I doubted very seriously that maybe we might have never met, you know, and so many others that I've met along this path. And so I'm extremely honored. I'm privileged. I'm gifted. I'm not a complainer. As you know me, I'm not a problem professor. I'm a solution, you know, person. I like to focus on solutions, and I just like to play our part. I'm a team player, and I just like to always do my part. And I think hopefully, you know, in you all's eyes, that y'all pleased with the work that we are doing out here.
So now you were talking specifically about the death of this. I was referencing a young person who got killed that inspired you, that really shook you. You moved forward, and you were about to talk about how you, out of looking at all the other pieces, you developed a specific model. Tell us about that model. What is the approach that you have innovated, if you will, for Man Up?
Yes, I call it a community justice and family justice approach. I believe strongly that the community is the solution to its own problems. I don't believe that we should look outside for the things that we already have inside, which is us. We have each other, you know, and I'm big on just organizing community. I always like to look for community-oriented solutions. And so when you put that family back together, that nucleus, that father, that mother, that child, that community back together, then we can actually see the results that we want to see. You know, to me, I think that's the big difference in what we do versus other organizations in this space. We start with the babies. You know, we work with young children as young as 5 years old. We started from day one, 18 years ago. We've been raising up young people to be young boys to become men and women to become young girls to become women and be conscious also. We run a cultural after school, you know, program at Man Up Inc. As you know, we are very Afrocentric. So it's about, you know, just being a community, being able to, you know, train community on how to solve our own problems, like you talked about the violence, you know, the crime issues, the job issues, the unemployment, the entrepreneur, the business issues. I believe that we are our own solutions. The person who you look in the mirror and see every day is the leader that you may be aspiring, you know, for. And so that's just been my approach, man. And it's been working, brother. As you mentioned, you know, we started in East New York, but now, you know, we're all over the borough. We're all over the borough of Brooklyn. We're throughout the city. And as you mentioned, you know, this model, and it's taken me across the country to be able to share this with other cities and states across the country. So, again, I'm very privileged.
Well, let me ask you this question, because I happen to believe that one of the distinctive features has to do with what we're dealing with Black History Month, right? I mean, it is the miseducation, quote unquote, Carter G. Woodson said, the miseducation of the Negro. It is the whole damage that was done when, as Malcolm said, of all the crimes committed against Africans by Europeans, he said the greatest crime was to take our name. What he meant by that was to take away, snatch away our culture, which is the anchor, which is the root, which helps to guide us in life. And so how important is the African-centered approach that you use in terms of sort of that prescription for sort of repairing that historical amnesia or that which we did not know about ourselves?
Mm-hmm. That is extremely important. That's something that they did not teach us in school. And so because we did not have knowledge of self, you know, we were deaf, dumb, and blind. So we looked at outside of ourselves and seen some reflections of ourselves, and they also taught us on how to hate ourselves. So our self-awareness was also as important as our cultural awareness. And so one of the things that we do as part of our instructions with the children throughout all of the members that come a part of the company, whether as employees or as participants, we you know, we drill down on that cultural, you know, theme and understanding that it is that is the centerpiece. That's the next us all, you know, to one another. So at Man Up Inc., you know, everybody that comes in, whether you are a classmate or a student or you are a teacher in our company, you're given an attribute of a brother and a sister. That's what we call each other throughout the company, and mother and our father. And so the babies are just, you know, they're learning to look at their fellow, you know, people that in the residence and communities that they live in as people that they should look, see as family. It's an extension of our family. And that's one of our philosophies. You know, hopefully when people see each other as family, they won't want to, you know, harm one another as much.
Right. Now, let me ask you, you've also have an approach, I don't know what they call it, peer counseling or violence interrupter models, in which those persons who you've identified as who have a high proclivity for perhaps engaging in gun violence and or who have done so, you actually bring them in and make them a part of Man Up. I mean, could you talk to us about that?
Yes, sir, very much so. Again, the community is the solution, you know, for its own change. And so using community members who have never, ever been used before in a way that we're doing today, it's the newest phenomenon that is breaking out across the country. We just got recognition from the president who just came into New York City just to confirm that the talk of the violence interrupter, you know, model is something now, the violence interventionist, you know, approach is actually a nuance and a new way to go in terms of reducing crime. And it's very simple. We take those persons who are the most influential people in that neighborhood, those individuals may have been there and done that, like myself. We call them credible messengers, and others may know them as formerly incarcerated people. You know, and we look at these men and women with value, and we say everybody has something, you know, to give and to offer to curb this solution in our, to create the solution in our neighborhood and curb the violence. And so, yeah, you're right. I'm very proud to be one of those agencies that are hiring men and women from the community who may have had backgrounds and brushes with the law or may have had, you know, a need for a second chance, and giving those individuals that second chance and giving them a chance to become, you know, the respectful, you know, honorable persons in their neighborhood, the gatekeepers of their communities. And that's the work that we do. So we use these individuals and all of their influence and their knowledge of the terrain, of the community, and we put them, we train them, and we put them right back in their own neighborhood. And people go to work right there in their own neighborhood to help us reduce the violence. Putting out little small fires when we hear about arguments and domestic disputes, we're the ones that can go in because we're familiar with those families and those individuals and be able to hopefully talk them away from using violence as a means to resolve their conflicts. And so it's been something that's been now in the city of New York since 2010, you know, so we're talking about 12 years. And, you know, it's been really in the country for about 20, and it's been an excellent addition to the work that we do, because now we have people who really didn't think that they had any meaning. They didn't think that people seen any value in them, that they realized that they have a lot of value.
Right. Now, there's been obviously a lot of focus. And, you know, I think some of it is COVID related. I mean, people have been cooped up, and this, the unemployment rate, all these different things have kind of combined in a way that, you know, that this has the whole nation focusing on gun violence. And of course, not only these murders that are so painful that take place in the community, but then, of course, most recently, a spat of ambushes and killing of police officers has really, really ramped up the call for, you know, for more police, for peace, for, you know, even some people are even calling for street crimes units, the return to what I call Giuliani style policing. So I'm just wondering, you know, I know there was a period of time when East New York in particular, now you're in various places throughout the city. So what's happening in East New York? Is East New York experiencing a dramatic increase or any increase? So just what's happening?
Well, we're getting our fair share, like every other precinct, any other community, unfortunately, that has the same underlying factors. As you know, even violence is quarantined, and it's not citywide. So when I say quarantine, that means that there are certain factors that breed these sort of crimes. The crimes that we are hearing and seeing about are only symptoms of the actual, you know, disease that we call violence. At the tail end, at the root of it is of course, it's that poverty, right, that always existed well before COVID even entered into the room. But when you take that historical, you know, discrimination and racism as it relates to certain neighborhoods and communities that are majority black and brown that have already been experiencing these issues, and then you toss in an unexpected pandemic like a COVID-19 that took everybody else off by storm, and you also look at the lack of the proper health care and the services that we received during that same pandemic. You know, with all of these factors going on, Dr. You know, Daniels, I mean, it did create what we hear was happening now that has unfortunately looked like it's returned from the 80s and the 90s type of violence. So, yes, you know, we have had our fair share. We have not been exempt, but we have been resilient. You know, our men and women have actually stepped up. We stepped up our training and our efforts. You know, the city of New York, I mean, respectfully, you know, have recognized us for our work and have added more, you know, of funding towards our work. So we've been able to hire more men and women, boots on the ground. And so we're in the middle of this violent storm that we're experiencing. And we're doing the very best that we can with the very limited amount of funding and resources that we have. It's still unfortunate, you know, that a young person in our neighborhoods and communities can access a gun, but they can't access a proper education. You know, they can get their hands on, a military-style weapon, but they can't get their hands on a job. And so we have to turn that around and make, really the right the wrongs that have been going on from the very beginning. If we really anticipate us getting out of both these pandemics, both with gun violence and with COVID.
Let me just tease this out a little bit. I know that one of the things that has not been really spoken about a great deal, and I read an article today about black voters are fleeing Biden and so forth and so on, which may be true, and part of it is because of bad messaging, because in even the first bill, the American Rescue Plan, I happen to know because I worked with Pastor Michael McBride with the Live Free campaign, and Erica Ford is also a part of that. That monies were allocated, to help invest more resources in communities. And then, a lot of people don't realize that if and when the Build Back Better bill, which has to be done by reconciliation, trying to get all these senators on place, there's about $5 billion that is in that bill that would be coming to these communities. And I say that because at the end of the day, the question becomes more resources. And one of the ideas that I have been floating for years and years and years, because it's back in the day and people have forgotten about it, is public service jobs. I mean, back in the day, in the 60s, almost every year, well, of course, there was something called a CETA program and all kinds of programs. CETA was one of them. But the government would literally employ hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of young people to give them jobs. Mm-hmm. And I understand what you're saying is, you get your hand on a gun, but you can't get your hand on a job. So I'm hoping that one of the things that also comes out of this is, it's always good to be talking to people and working with people. But, I always said that good jobs with good wages, in fact, even a piece of job with some wages would do a lot to calm down.
Yeah, it would go a long way.
It would go a long way. You agree with that?
No, totally, man. I mean, we have examples of that in our neighborhoods where we are. The fact that we can't create opportunities for people who really never thought they can have one, it does make a big, big, big difference. But whenever you hear about the government dollars, it's always a great, it sounds good, it looks good, but if it doesn't land, if it doesn't make its way all the way down into the neighborhoods where I sit right now, it really means nothing, at the end of the day. And again, I like to always go back to, like I said, my community justice approach. This is, again, where we need community to support us. One of the great models of this is like the Nation of Islam. They don't rely on any government funding for them to continue the amazing work that they're doing, nor should we. We literally, we're over-relying on these public dollars, and it really holds us hostage because we shouldn't have to when we know that we have a great community of people that can support us respectfully. But as you said, though, Dr. Daniels, it's about resources. When our mayor, when we had conversations and we put our minds together, he comes up with, with the police model is relating to precision policing, and he agrees that we need to have precision resources. If we're going to target certain young people and individuals in certain communities, to help them stop with violence, we need to also target them same individuals with resources. Because if we get the right resources, like you said, a job and an opportunity and decent education, then a lot of these individuals won't turn to violence. I can assure you of that, personally, because I see it happening on a daily basis.
Well, that leads me to my final question, or next to my final question, because we also want people to be able to be in touch with Man Up. As you're aware, my program last week was dedicated to a call on Mayor Eric Adams to convene a community summit of all stakeholders, particularly those who are working in the neighborhoods. It's very easy to call, bankers and real estate folk and the elite and so forth. And I'm not saying they should not be included, but they're not on the ground. So we've issued this call from the Institute of Black World 21st Century for and hope that our mayor will hear it, for a comprehensive, inclusive summit to bring all the stakeholders together, sit around the table, look at each other eyeball to eyeball, and to discuss how to devise a comprehensive strategy that people can buy into that will resolve this problem. And I'm just wondering what your thoughts are about such a call.
Oh, no question about it. Like you said, Dr. Daniels, this is going to take everybody. As he has mentioned, the mayor himself, this is going to take all hands on deck. You know, no one of us should be left exempt. And we should be able to have, like you said, a summit where all of the stakeholders are at the table willing to do their part. You know, I always take the armed forces as an example. I use it as an example when we talk about this approach. You know, the Navy doesn't do what the Marines does. The Marines can't do what the Air Force do, and the Air Force won't do what the Navy, you know, what the Army would do. And so once everybody understands what lane they belong in, how they can all contribute to us ending the violence that we see in our communities, then that's the beginning of when we begin to start realizing how we can comprehensively really attack this virus. And really be able to hopefully, you know, reduce it to the point where we can stop it altogether. But it's going to require everybody, you know, and every stakeholder to play their part. You know, the funding community, as you mentioned, the corporate community, they're not the ones that are the boots on the ground. That's our job. So, as you know, like we said, if we're the Marines, a part of that armed forces, all we need you to do is fly over us and drop down that necessary aid. You know, make sure that we have the proper resources. And we will carry those resources right into the trenches and get it to the people who is most neediest to be able to do this. So I agree with this summit, the call for such a summit. I know that Mayor Adams also is aligned with that mindset and with that theory. We do speak on a regular basis about our comprehensive approach to ending gun violence. And so that's something I'm looking forward to helping you help put together and be a part of, because that can make a big difference when we have such a summit.
All right. Well, we appreciate that. We're going to keep pushing the word out. And I also think it's important to for people to come and see, even some of those corporate people, even some of those folks who don't have a clue, frankly. Sometimes to experience it, to see it firsthand, is the kind of thing that can be very helpful. And it is very impressive to come to East New York, and I'm sure other places, to see the Man Up model in action, to meet the folks, to meet the sisters and brothers, you know, who've been in the program.
Yes. But,
and they speak for themselves, you know, and hear them talk about what they're doing with pride. I mean, with real pride and strength. I mean, it is something to behold. So if people want to be in touch with Man Up Incorporated and whatever way. And by the way, you know, I sent you a couple of interns when I was at York College.
Yes,
you know,
yes, you did.
And I'll never forget one of them. And one of the students called back and said, Dr. Daniels, he said, when I go in, he said, you know, they call me sister. I mean, I'm sister, and we call each other brothers and sisters. I mean, so I can validate, brother, that they were influenced by that. But how do people be in touch with Man Up?
Well, we really appreciate any type of support, information, resource banking that people would love to give to our great organization, Man Up Incorporated. Of course, folks can visit our website at manupinc.org. or www.manupinc.org, or they can call our phone number. We had the same phone number for the last 18 years. It's 718-498-2320. And of course, they can, you know, come through. Like you said, seeing is believing. We have an open door policy. You know, and we have no problem with people doing, you know, even just visits. This coming, we have hosted a number of delegations, as you mentioned, because, like, I agree, we wanted to be able to show people better than to tell people. I think that this is the time that we, you know, we not only say Black Power, but we also show Black Power.
So 718-498-2320, is that correct?
That is correct, Dr. Daniels.
All right. Well, my brother, we appreciate you so much. We're extending an invitation to you. We've been discussing this issue with the Pan-African Unity Dialogue, and I've been trying to get you to come to the number. Anyway, I'm extending an invitation to you. February, at the end of the month, we're having a Malcolm X Memorial meeting, and we've been discussing these issues with people like Dr. Divine Pryor,
Yes.
Cassandra for Frederick from Drug Policy Alliance. So we'd like to have you come and also talk to people about the Man Up model. So I really appreciate you spending time with us. I know you're traveling all over the country and doing this good work. So Godspeed and God bless, and the ancestors are smiling on you for the work that you're doing.
Thank you. Thank you, Dr. Daniels. I so appreciate that coming from you, being one of my elder mentors. And I admire all the work that you continue to do. You guys and ladies are very inspiring for me. And I really am appreciative of every time that you reach out to give us a chance to talk over your airways or in person. So I appreciate you and I love you. Okay, Doc?
All right. Appreciate it. All right. That was A.T. Mitchell. And we wanted you to hear his background, where he came from, what he's been doing, how he came to do what he's doing, and how he is doing it and why he is doing it. It is really, really inspiring. It gives, again, I turn to one of my leaders and mentors. Had the opportunity, one of the great opportunities in my life, to be executive director of the National Rainbow Coalition and deputy campaign manager for Reverend Jesse Lewis Jackson's 1988 campaign. And even now, he will say, keep hope alive. Keep hope alive. Well, the work that Man Up does keep hope alive in our neighborhood. And he talks about we are each other's greatest teachers. We really, really believe fundamentally in that in the Institute of the Black World 21st Century. We talk about that all the time, that we should learn from each other. We are each other's greatest assets in our community. So we want to get your opinions about what you've heard. We're going to go to our call-in section now on the soapbox at 212-209-2877, 212-209-2877. I understand last week we ran into some technical problems with our phone because, my wife and partner listens in. She said, "Wow, you don't have any callers calling in." And she's saying, "Well, why is that?" I said, "Well, I don't know, but maybe people were just listening." And she said, then later on I found we had some technical difficulties. We don't have any today. You can reach us at 212-209-2877. And what I'm doing is we are pushing the Institute of the Black World 21st Century, because we are doing this work through our drug policy initiative, drug and police reform and accountability initiative, working to create new models of public safety and law enforcement. We're very, very much involved in doing that work. We have fought against the war on drugs. A lot of this, what you're seeing, these no-knock warrants. And even today, one of the dangers is that people will want to, even in our own neighborhoods, will start to turn against the kind of reforms. And they aren't just reforms, because the system really needs a real overhaul. So even today, at about 11 o'clock, I think, the Coalition for Bail Reform had a major rally because people are now trying to roll back bail reform. But the fact of the matter is, the vast majority of people, particularly those in Rikers Island, had no business being there in the first place. Some of them were in jail, hadn't even been properly charged. I mean, the abuses of the system were terrible. And that abuse also affects young people. You have an arrest, and then you're supposed to get a speedy trial. And people in jail a year and a half, 2 years, and no trial. And they're not a threat to. I mean, so the bail system, was very, very, very neat, was very much in need of repair. And so we want to get your perspectives again on what you've heard about Man Up. Number one, comments on Man Up Incorporated. 212-209-2877. Do you think a call for a mayoral summer would work? Are we wasting our time issuing this call to Mayor Adams? And we hope he's listening, or someone in his office is listening. If not, maybe people need to be calling him to listen to WBAI. We know he listens to WBAI. So, Mayor Adams, we're waiting for you to respond. Can it work? And then, your own opinions. You're out there, many of you. You are experiencing, you're hearing about this. What are the causes and cures for gun violence and this epidemic of murders? What's your perspective? What's your opinion? The professor is waiting for you to call at 212-209-2877. We have, you know, got a little time here, a little time. The phones are wide open. You can get in immediately if you call right now at 212-209-2877. Next week, as I said before, we're going to have a special on Malcolm X, Elhaj Malik Shabazz, our Black Shining Prince, as dubbed by Ossie Davis. And, of course, you know, someone who has went through some similar kinds of experiences and emerged as one of the most revolutionary leaders of our time, coming from someone who was creating difficulties to someone who actually was organizing to change in our community. And we'll be hearing, first and foremost, our very, very special guest will be Kevin Powell, who's a great admirer of Malcolm, but has done so much work himself, incredible work on this and so many issues. I mean, he has such a diverse portfolio. We want to get his take on the crises that we see in America today, what his feelings are about it. So again, 212-209-2877 gets you instantly into the action, and we have a caller who is ready to go. So good afternoon. You're on Vantage Point.
Good afternoon. Can you hear me okay?
Oh, yes, we can hear you fine.
Okay. I'm calling from Brooklyn, and I'm in my late 70s. The thing that I did not hear was the word war. The environment that we have been in since our capture has been a war environment. It has taken place, in my opinion, on the psychological level, as well as on the physical level. When I came out of the Army in the 60s, we were addressing ourselves as sister woman and brother man. I was on the bus on 7th Avenue in Brooklyn, passing John Jay High School. The students got on the bus, and they were addressing one another as niggers and so forth.
Right.
And it had gotten so bad. If you're familiar with 7th Avenue, there are a lot of various ethnic groups that use that corridor. It was so embarrassing that I got from the back of the bus to the front of the bus and got off. Later that evening, I was on the bus going home, and it was a young black woman with two children, one about 5 or 6 and the other around 9 or 10. She was on her cell phone talking to someone. Every third or fourth word that came out of this sister's mouth was nigger. Now, there, in my mind, every time that we use that disgusting, blood-soaked word, we enforce or reinforce white supremacy, because everybody knows that niggas can't stick together. And the brother was talking about sticking together. And so I don't see any way out unless we cast away illusion, as Chairman Mao told his people, and prepare for struggle.
Well, but let me just say, and by the way, not only the other thing I thought you would say is they just brush, if you try to speak to some of these young people, they'll brush you by. There's no real respect. Not everybody, certainly. I don't want to generalize,
right,
but far too many. There's no respect for elders in a way that we used to be able to do and whatnot. But in all fairness to what Man Up is doing, they address the issue you're talking about. They may not use the word war, but they would not allow people to use that word. And they're teaching people about the word and what it means, and to have an affirmative sense of culture, and also to talk about the need to protect our community, to defend our community, so that you're not becoming, as you know, as Malcolm was, as a lost young man. He was a problem, but once he got his head on straight, he became a liberator. And so I think we're saying much
but
of
he
the
got,
same thing.
He got assassinated.
We need to be able to get more liberating, you know, people who are fighting
what
for
I'm
our
saying,
liberation.
Yeah, I mean, what you said is true, but the brother got assassinated. We have not figured out how to keep our leaders alive.
Well, That's because we need more leaders. And we have, they can't kill us all. But look, appreciate your perspective. And certainly share your views. And we certainly need to be teaching a lot more in terms of self-respect in our community. Appreciate it so much. Again, others can call it 212-209-2877. Let's go to our next caller. Good afternoon. You're on Vantage Point.
Hey, all power to the people, brother.
All power to the people.
Hey, because of assimilation, we have assimilated. Yo, we took the side of the assimilists in the 60s and 70s. We joined the assimilists. We desired to join institutions of white supremacy to liberate us, and it hasn't worked. Voting doesn't work. Dealing with these people don't work. We have to build our own institutions. We have to organize our people to build and erect our own institutions that will produce the minds capable to deal with white supremacy. But right. Voting is not it. Eric Adams is not it. Eric Adams
okay, so
and all the politicians.
Okay, I got that. So,
but hold on, don't cut me off because we don't agree, brother. Don't cut me off.
No, I just want to ask you a question. Can I ask you a question? So, therefore, tell people the organization that you're building so people can join you.
Hey, my name is Africa, man. I'm in Newark, New Jersey. I'm with the Black Panther Party, New Africa Black Panther Party. We're located on 309 South Orange Avenue in Newark. And we don't believe joining the institutions of white supremacy will liberate black folks. Fanon said it. George Jackson said it. Malcolm said it. Even Martin said, "Yo, I'm
all right. And that's why one of the three founders ran for mayor, right? Because he didn't believe in voting.
Whose father? Who ran for mayor?
One of the founders. I'm blanking on the name now. Huey Newton.
Yeah, but listen. You have
who ran for mayor? Bobby Rush.
Yeah,
Bobby Rush.
Bobby Seale
is a member of Congress. So But anyway, I hear you. That's the new Black Panther Party. You gave the address, and people can hopefully join you.
Those people don't describe pantherism or dialectic materialism. The science is the science. Whether they sell out or they don't, that's up to them. But according to the science, you're not supposed to join the government. Joining the government is blasphemous. It's treacherous to
our
people.
All right. Okay, brother. All right. Okay, I got it. Huey P. Newton, you're talking about Huey P. Newton understood dialectics. That's what the Black Panther Party is about. They were radical in that regard. But appreciate your call. Let's move on to others. 212-209-2877. Good afternoon. You're on Vantage Point.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. You're on the air.
Good afternoon. Yes, good afternoon.
You on the air?
Okay, yeah. Listen, all those guys had good points. I'm just saying, the use of that word, the first brother that said he was in the service and everything, he came home and that word was thrown all over the place. I had the same situation. You know, it's a lack of self-respect and dignity among a lot of the young kids, you know, because I had stepped to some kids on the train about that word, you know. And, you know, they kind of like chilled out. You know what I mean? They didn't use it as long as I was riding with them, but I don't know. That has a lot to do with what's going on with our people and in our situation today, I believe also.
Yeah, and I think the other thing that Man Up is talking about is more of us in terms of our churches, our civic organizations, even on our blocks. We have to find a way to devote more time touching our sisters and brothers and embracing them as opposed to disparaging them. And I don't mean we don't have to condone their behavior, but we have to find a way to lovingly, you know, bring them back into the fold. But you got to bring them into, when you bring them into the fold, it sure helps if you can also point them to a job, point them to some education, point them to something that will provide a way of living too.
Yes. And you got to start in your immediate family for one, you know, teach your young men and women in the family, all these things, you know?
Right.
Let them know where they at in the country and the state that we live in.
Right.
You know what I'm saying?
All right, my brother. Appreciate your call.
Hey, wait, doctor, can I say one more thing?
Quickly, yes.
You know, I want to say that maybe the answer to the gun situation in our community is, it might sound harsh, but I think if anybody get caught with an illegal gun, they should get a mandatory 7 years in prison.
I'm leery of these mandatory sentences because they always come. They always apply to us, and they don't apply to everybody else. You know what I mean? They come down hard on black people, the drug war was a war on us and all that. First of all, we need to figure out how to stop guns, period, in this country. This is like a cowboy society, this false notion. Really, these guns are about being afraid of black people from the very beginning. A lot of this is about the fear of black people, the fear that somehow we will retaliate for all of that's been done to us. And so you got these right-wing radical conservatives who are misinterpreting the Second Amendment, but they've captured the Supreme Court. Judges do matter. The political system does matter. You cannot be in this space and do not interact with this space. And so we got to really, really deal with that. But I think we can get this done. We just have to continue to creatively work on it. The person I was trying to think of, because, you know, sometimes I have these senior moments, Bobby Seale. Bobby Seale was one of the original Black Panthers, along with Huey P. Newton and Eldridge Cleaver. You know, and Bobby Seale ran for mayor of Oakland and was advocated for because there is a way in which you can engage in electoral politics without selling out. It's like Dr. Mylana Konringa said, we are realistic, but that's reality. We have come to change it. It is fighting for those kinds of change. Let's see if we have one more caller here. Good afternoon. You're on Vantage Point. Well, I guess not. Okay. All right. Well, you know, good conversation. Next week, we'll have more conversation, but we're going to be listening to Malcolm next week. I'm hoping we can put together a premium to support the work of WBAI. And I just want the premium to be simple. Maybe throw in a book, but I want Message to the Grassroots and Ballots or Bullets. Though these to me are the two greatest Malcolm speeches. They're not identical. They show evolution and development from one to the other. But, I mean, they're just powerful, powerful, powerful. And maybe we throw in a book, you know, and you know, see can we get a premium to support it while we bring people in. I'm going to reach out to Dr. James Smalls. Of course, he'll, in the morning, I'm sure, be, you know, taking the pilgrimage to the gravesite. We'll see can he come back and help provide some interpretation for us in the second part of our show. We'll find some others as well. But our lead guest will be none other than Kevin Powell, someone with whom I have great respect, great admiration for the work that he's done. You know, you might say in some ways the son of the hip-hop generation, but much more. And also I know that he has great admiration and great respect for our black shining prince, Malcolm X. So anyway, that'll be our show next week. We're going to have 2 hours, and we're going to be, you know, we'll be kicking it. And we want you to join us as well. But as for today, we got a crisis in front of us. Man Up Incorporated is one of those organizations that is not only talking about it, Mr. Say Ain't Nothing, Mr. Do Is Everything, according to Junebug Jabbo Jones. You can reach Man Up at 718-498-2320. 718-498-2320. That's the organization that you heard A.T. Mitchell, strongly supported by Charles Barron and Inez Barron, you know, in terms of the work that they've done to help push them out and recognize. So we need that model expanded. We also need it to be funded. You know, we need it to be funded. Good jobs. We need a massive jobs program to put people to work. All right, that's going to be our show for today. Again, this is the professor, Dr. Ron Daniels. The show is Vantage Point. It's here on WBAI 99.5 FM in collaboration with YCRadio.org. Next week, it'll be Kevin Powell, and we'll be talking about our Black Shining Prince and a special right here. We'll be right back next week.